another episode of Dice Hard, where we take your favorite movies and turn them into tabletop games. And now your host, Alex.
Welcome to another episode of Dice Hard, where I am missing my regular guest, Ben. He's off, I don't know, dancing or something. He's probably doing some sweet dancing. I don't know. But I do have my very special guest, Jeffrey.
Hey, mate, how's it going?
It's all good. Jeff, one of my good friends, not having designed any board games yet.
No. I have definitely dabbled, but unsuccessfully thus far in a commercial sense. But I have that happy knack, which I think a lot of people have, of starting a whole heap of things and maybe following through with one or two of them. So far, board game design hasn't gotten through to the final cut yet.
I think one of my favourite stories you told me was when I managed to get a copy of Australia, the Martin Wallace game. We managed to borrow it off Des or Ella before it was released on Kickstarter. So we managed to get a copy of that, and we played it, and we had a pretty hard time working out the rules. We played it twice, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I never actually played the final version, so there was definitely some clunky stuff in that prototype for sure.
Yeah. But we played it a couple of times, and you were like Jeff's really good at feedback. That's why I know him so well, because he comes to my feedback nights. You gave them a ton of feedback, and I don't believe they implemented any of it.
Yeah, it's quite funny because I feel like sometimes when you give big feedback, it's a little bit too hard to work with because you're at a point where you're saying, well, you kind of need to pull out this major mechanism and put something else in. It's sometimes not practical depending on what stage you come in.
Yeah.
You know, hey, have you considered making this a dice game? You know, like it's just...
Have you considered changing the game completely?
In fairness to them, it can be a bit hard to take that on board. So.
Yeah, definitely. Which I thought was, unfair, because I thought a lot of the feedback, because obviously you're good at it, which is, you know, why I invite you to my playtesting things, you have a good knack for this sort of thing. So I am eager to find out what you are pitching tonight, which you can go ahead and introduce us to.
Great. Well, I thought we'd take a look at one of my favourite movies, possibly my favourite. Oh, definitely top five anyway. Fight Club. So Fight Club's, I'll just read the synopsis off IMDb. It's about an insomniac office worker and a devil may care soap maker forming an underground fight club that evolves into something much, much more. So it stars them.
Which, of course, gives you no much, information much at all. Yeah.
Not really. I mean, it stars Edward Norton, Brad Pitt. Actually, Meatloaf's in it, and so's the female lead's Helena Bonham Carter. So some fairly big-name actors there, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a massive movie. I remember watching it I'm pretty sure I saw this at the cinemas in year 9, and I didn't re-watch it for this episode because I watched it quite a few times back then. But I remember, half my friends going, this is one of the greatest movies of all time. It is so inspiring. And the other half just going, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, and I think it was one of those movies that the cinema crowd was more the second type. Yeah. And then when it hit the DVD repeat watch sort of thing, where people could really dig into it, it really gathered some legs and became a massive hit.
Bit of a cult following.
At that stage, yeah. I mean, it blew my mind the first time I watched it. It's one of those movies with a big twist. Now, I don't know, are we comfortable spoilering this this twist?
People that listen to Dice Hard know that we spoil everything, including the actual movie. I mean,
it would be semi-impossible to perform the task without spoiling this, I think. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess, do you want me to run through a little bit about what happens in the movie so we can sort of make sense?
Right? Yeah. I'm sure a ton of people haven't seen this movie, so, go for it.
Yeah, so, I mean, in Fight Club, basically, Edward Norton's character forms a friendship with Brad Pitt's character, and as the synopsis said, they start an underground fight club. But as the movie progresses, the club evolves into more of a cult type sort of secret society type thing. And the two sort of main protagonists sort of have a bit of conflict over the direction of things. It's getting a bit extreme and a bit out of control. And as the movie progresses, Edward Norton sort of starts to turn against Brad Pitt's character. You know, who's maybe going a bit too far with things. But as it turns out, Tyler Durden, which is Brad Pitt's character, has hatched this plan to blow up the American banking system and reset the credit rating so that everyone has no more debt anymore.
That's the best plan of the film, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so Jack, who's Edward Norton's character, tries to stop him. But then the sort of big twist at the end is that they're actually the same person, and that Jack's the only real character, and that Tyler Durden is a split personality of Jack, who
when the other guys are sleeping in his insomnia state.
Yeah, so he's actually when he actually sleeps, he sort of turns into Tyler. So I mean, the poor guy must have slept for 10 years by the end of the movie, basically.
That's true.
Doing all this stuff. I mean, it's one of the good things about the movie is it's kind of semi-realistic around sort of the whole mental illness side of the split personality. It's technically possible for someone to do this.
Yes.
But, you know, probably a bit of an extreme case, but it's not totally unheard of, this type of split personality thing, and maybe doing some extreme things when you're in a dissociative state. It's a really interesting movie, and the twist is great. I mean, yeah. Most people, I don't really pick the twist during the movie, so if you've never seen it before, we've completely ruined it for you. So
yeah, not until a lot later anyway. I mean, like, one of my favourite scenes is where they sort of start revealing that they are the same person, and like, it's the Fight Club is sort of a place where these men just fight. No questions asked, no hard feelings. It was just, we're going to fight, and then that's it. That's the end of it. And it started off by the main character just beating on himself in the car park. And my favorite bit is where you sort of see this happening, because at the start of the movie, you see the main character fighting Tyler Durden, but it's in his head. So at the end, you see him fighting himself only. And this other guy just comes in and goes, can I join in?
Yeah, it's quite funny because they extract Tyler Durden's character out of a few scenes that you previously saw, and it just looks hilarious because it's Edward Norton character's Jack just wailing on himself, just doing something by himself that makes absolutely no sense. And people's reactions to it kind of made sense in the original context of the scene, but they make even more sense when you realise there's only one person there.
I think this movie was actually in a massive time of amazing movies for me, because I believe right around this was The Matrix and Jurassic Park 3.
I think Donnie Darko was not too far after this. Was another big head trip movie.
And American History X the year before with Edward Norton as well, which, like, it just blew my mind.
And I think American Beauty was around this stage, which is a big twist type psychological, you know, movie as well. So I was actually very into movies around this time, and I think some of those big sort of more cerebral, I guess, titles were drawing people in for a while.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, I spent hundreds of dollars at the movies during year 9 and 10.
For me, it was probably maybe a couple of years later on the DVD. Sort of, I had a big collection going at one stage, which is kind of comical nowadays because I don't know anyone at the age of 18 would actually even own a DVD anymore or even a Blu-ray. It's all digital downloads now.
Quite trip, they make good coasters.
You put them in the microwave, it's pretty cool too.
That's true. Yeah.
But, you know. Maybe don't try that at home, kids.
All right, we should probably get to our pitches. So my first player would be the last person that actually just beat themselves up.
I was going to say, last person in a fight.
The last person to use soap.
Oh, yeah.
The last person to be a part of a cult.
I'll, You could also say last person to visit a support group, because that heavily features, you know, early on in the movie.
Yes, of course. What was the support group? Was it for Insomniacs?
No, well, that's the funny thing about it. So he cures his insomnia early in the movie, and you kind of get the impression, if his cure hadn't been, that maybe none of this would have ever happened. But it's difficult to say, because the movie doesn't really explain things fully. But he starts going to cancer support groups because he's so numbed by his everyday life, and he just wants to feel sad about it, but he doesn't have any real problems.
So he just goes
and pretends he has problems, and and he gets addicted to it. And it's the only thing, you know, crying out and pretending he has cancer or, you know, all these other random conditions is the only thing that makes him able to sleep at night.
Yeah, that's right. I remember the cancer support group now, and he actually just bawls his eyes out, and it was the only thing that would help him sleep.
Yeah. And then it gets ruined because Marla, who's Helena Bonham Carter's character, is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And he sort of starts to become paranoid. She's going to blow the whistle on him.
Yeah.
And kind of kills his buzz. So.
That's right. Last one to go to a support group. Unfortunately, I don't think I've ever been to a support group, joined a cult. I've probably beaten myself up by running into things by accident.
Well, that's where I thought, you know, last person to be in a fight, that's not a bad one, you know, because most people, I'm speaking probably from a male perspective. I'd say definitely most males have been in a fight at some point.
It doesn't have to be a physical fight.
And probably
fight.
A lot of females too, I would imagine.
It doesn't have to be a physical fight.
Well, yeah, that's true. It could just be a verbal one.
Yeah. I'm pretty easygoing, so I haven't had a lot of fights recently either. it might be you just win most of these.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe.
Do you want to just pitch first?
Sorry?
Do you want to just pitch first?
In terms of the type of game?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, my thoughts were, whenever I sort of think about a design, I want to do something that is a little bit different.
Of course.
So just because it's a bit more interesting to sort of, design something that maybe hasn't been done before. So I was thinking, you've got a lot of social deduction games and, like, plenty of just sort of economic Euros. But I was thinking to maybe combine the two. And have, like, I guess the closest comparison might be Battlestar Galactica, but maybe it's a cooperative Euro game where you're all trying to get it's called Project Mayhem, the project to blow up the banks.
Ooh.
So you're all trying to complete Project Mayhem together, but you're all Jack, and your turns or your actions represent a fragment of Jack's psyche.
Oh.
And so then I thought that, you could have one person is actually Tyler Durden. And so he wants the project to succeed as well. But at the same time, he wants to drive Jack insane so his personality can take over.
Yes.
So he actually has the same overall goal. But I figured you could have like a sanity meter to sort of measure how much you've gone insane during the course of play. And if it hits a certain mark, then the Tyler character will win.
Yeah.
And you could even, depending on how you wanted to set it up, you could even have sometimes maybe, you know, the card shuffled in. So sometimes there's a Tyler and sometimes there's not. You could have a look at that. Because that's always, that's a bit of an element of intrigue to it. You know, is there a traitor? Is there not? You know.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about it is the traitor wouldn't necessarily even be a traitor. It'd kind of, you know, because this end goal is the same. They're just trying to, manipulate a secondary objective that maybe everyone else wants to avoid as well.
Oh, yeah.
So then that concept I kind of liked. Mechanically is where the challenge comes in. So I figured you'd have to have some, you know, reason for everybody to want to take certain actions that might increase your insanity.
Yep.
But not necessarily all the time. And then trying to find times as the Tyler character to take an action that increases the team's insanity, but where it seems like it's a bit justified, comes down to whether or not you can get away with it.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So I was thinking, depending on what mechanism you...
Because essentially with, like, cooperative play as well, as all my listeners will probably remember me saying, if one person can just tell the other person what to do, then, you know, it may as well just be one person playing it. So maybe everyone actually has a hidden objective. Not that will make them compete, but it's an objective that has to be reached in order for all of them to win, and they're not allowed to tell each other what that is.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that would fit in with the theme of the movie pretty well.
Yeah.
Because for most of the movie, Jack doesn't even know what the objective of Project Mayhem actually is.
That's true.
And actually, a fair bit of the movie, he's just trying to figure it out. So that could actually be part of the game too. So you could have actions you can take to further your own objective, or maybe to find out a bit more about other people's.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, I like it. I like it.
I agree with your point there, like, that you always make, is that unless there's some hidden information in a co-op, it is really a solo game that's stretched out amongst a number of players, which can be fun too.
Yeah.
But it's always a lot more fun if there's a reason for people to play their own actions individually.
Yeah. This might be able to be combined with my idea. So my idea was only a two-player game. So each player would actually play one of the personalities with a random mission or several missions each that they need to achieve. I haven't gone a lot into how this would be played mechanically yet, but the main point is that what one player does on their turn or achieves on their turn will affect the other player on their turn because, if Tyler needed to get to, I don't know, Chicago, and is it Jack? I never knew the main character's name, because even on IMDb it just says the narrator.
Yeah, it's Jack, and okay. The only reason why you know is because he refers to himself in the third person during parts of the movie.
Oh, okay.
So,
I wonder why it doesn't say that on IMDb.
Yeah, because I don't think does he actually say his name at the start of the movie? I don't know if he does. I can't remember if he does.
It actually specifically says in the storyline, a nameless first-person narrator.
Yeah, but I remember there's this thing where he reads books about, they're like medical books written in the third person.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's like he says, I am Jack's raging bile duct and I am Jack's colon and all this stuff. He keeps referring to himself as Jack, so I think his name's supposed to be Jack, but well, I might be wrong, actually.
So Tyler needs to get to Chicago, and Jack needs to go and pick up some supplies for something else, and he needs to travel in the opposite direction. It's going to make it harder for the Tyler character to go and get what he needs to do in Chicago. So he has to, or that player has to change what they're trying to achieve in their turn because they're not in the right location to do what they need to do in immediately.
That could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to try your best to piggyback off what the other player is doing.
Yeah, that was the idea. And they're the first person to achieve whatever wins. Like, I imagine in my version there would be essentially points of stamina and energy, sorry, well, that's the same thing, stamina, mental cohesion.
Yeah, I think sanity would have to definitely be
sanity, durability,
a meter in there.
Because they have to go to Fight Club to sort of release their tensions and sleep. Like, if one person has no more energy and has to sleep, they might have to go to a Fight Club and then...
Yeah, absolutely. I think fatigue should definitely be a meter because lack of sleep is a big part of the actual... I think it all plays into the fact that he's tired because Tyler's running around doing things at night that he doesn't even know about. So
exactly. So I mean that was my idea, and I wonder if I like the idea of hidden traitors, and I like the idea of there possibly not being a hidden traitor. And if you have hidden objectives, then
Yeah, that's sort of the difference between everyone being kind of a traitor,
yeah,
or having, you know, it's sort of like, you know, rather than Battlestar Galactica, you're sort of looking more like something Nemesis there,
yeah,
where it's people can work together or they can have completely separate goals.
Yeah.
And you don't know until you sort of trust people a little bit and try and suss them out, which is really fun.
Yeah, definitely. And there might even be some goals that they want to achieve together, but they don't know it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the two-player game definitely makes sense in the context of the movie, like because it's those two really strong protagonists the whole way through. But of course, you could also expand that to more.
Do, yeah, more players, because it just means that maybe Jack's awake time is sort of fractured. So, like,
yeah,
if it was a four-player game, three people control the daytime and one person controls the nighttime. Awake time, asleep time.
Yeah, or maybe even people just have cards that have waking actions, sleeping actions.
Oh, yeah.
And they can pick up, you know, they can be individual players, but they can pick up on different parts of the what the characters are able to do at day or night, depending on what their hand is.
Yeah.
And what you were saying before about how one action affecting another person, I mean, sometimes that works really well with double-edged cards too.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Tyler is awake at, you know, mainly in control at night and Jack mainly during the day, maybe certain actions build up your insanity, which make the night actions more robust because Tyler has more control.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And
day actions weaker because you've lost a little bit of control in the day. Exactly. So if you need those day actions to become stronger because of your objectives, then you're motivated to try and reduce or increase sanity depending on what, you know, your objective might be.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that idea a lot. So, I mean, I don't mind going on a Euro social thing.
I really thought it'd be cool to try and complete Project Mayhem as the objective, you know, that is an overarching thing of the game because, you know, that's probably the main point of the movie.
Yeah.
It makes sense that that's what characters would be trying to do if you're playing the game.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, but potentially, that could be a background thing, and maybe there's characters who are trying to stop it, like what Jack was for quite a portion of the movie.
Or maybe it's like just a level indicator as well, like how far you guys all achieved.
Yeah, maybe. Actually, now that I think about it, it would be kind of cool if, I don't know, maybe, yes, different secret objectives that maybe some are on Project Mayhem and some are trying to do something else or,
oh, yeah,
you know, it's just a bit, I don't know how much other things, I mean, aside from building the fight club.
What about building his relationship with Marla?
Marla, yeah, that could be another one.
There's gathering of resources. I mean, he has to keep his job. That's one thing. And he's
for a certain amount of time.
Yep.
Until eventually he convinces his job to pay his boss to pay him out to quit, which is quite a funny scene.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, so I mean, he's got to maintain a job for a certain amount of time. He has to get enough sleep or non-sleep. Like someone's objective might actually just be, make sure you get X amount of sleep and X amount of non-sleep.
Yeah, like cure your insomnia or something.
Yep, visit support groups.
Yeah, that's it. I think definitely there should...
Anyway.
Yeah, because the character also... a part of his psyche really cares about some of the guys in his fight club that he's friends with.
Yeah.
Particularly Bob, who's played by Meatloaf, who's the cancer survivor who grew breasts from all the estrogen treatments. I mean, this movie really has a sick sense of humor. I mean, to make fun of cancer patients, that's just brutal, but you can't help but laugh to some extent.
Is there anything else? I mean, I guess there's a lot of little things that all build up to Project Mayhem. Even stealing vans. Did they steal the vans in the end that they put the explosives in?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a whole heap of little actions they do, like you say.
Scouting.
They steal fat from the liposuction clinic to make their soap.
Yeah.
They figure out ways to get fired from their jobs.
Forgot where they got
at one fire. Stage. At one stage, they have to like intimidate the mobster that owns the pub that they fight under.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, they pull off some pretty cool stuff, you know, just through
fighting.
It's funny because they basically their insanity is so profound that people don't want anything to do with them, so they just keep leaving them alone because they're scared of them because they're just such weirdos.
No offense, I'd be scared too. That's like, it's pretty intimidating to come down into a basement that's full of guys that are just beating the shit out of each other and go, I want you guys out. Maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'd be cool if and the other thing they do is they start that training program. So they leave people outside the door and psychologically abuse them and try and make them quit until they prove they're not going to give up.
Yeah.
So there's a whole heap of little scenes in the movie that are quite clever that could be actions or part of actions in a game.
Yeah.
And there's a whole, as you said, it's kind of cool that, you know, maybe your objective is to grow the amount of recruits into the fight club to a certain number.
Yeah.
I still thought it'd be cool if as you recruited more people into the fight club, they inevitably become like your workers or a resource you can use to get more actions done.
Yeah, I like that.
Or perhaps if some cards have a requirement that you need at least this many people in your fight club to take this action.
Yes, which means that they have to get the people first and then be able to take the action.
It's kind of like, what's the game, Terraforming Mars. You might get a whole heap of cards in your hand in the first turn, but only maybe half of them are even remotely practical to hold on to play early.
Yeah.
So if you keep one of these more expensive cards, you're really making an investment in, hey, I'm going to have to get the stuff I need to do this at some point, you know.
Yeah.
Or you could just toss them and try and, you know, keep some short-term stuff, but then you don't really have an overall goal.
Yeah.
So that's always the thing in that game.
All right. I've got two mechanic pitches for you. So mechanic pitch one would be that everyone has a couple of objectives to achieve, but on the back of the objective cards is like a number. So say if you achieve the objective of getting the vans for the demos to go in, if you achieve the objective, you get 4 points towards Project Mayhem. And if you don't, obviously you're down 4 points. But if you no one gets it, the back of the card will tell you how many points to achieve, how many points that mission is worth. And all of the missions would be valued 3, 4, or 5 points or something like that. So, say you start a 4-player game, you deal out 2 missions each, and there's, I don't know, 12, 16 missions. The backs of the cards, the backs of the missions that you don't use, gives you your automatic starting point towards Project Mayhem.
Okay. So you've got, depending on how, if you got really hard objectives, though, wouldn't that mean you'd start off further away?
Yes, but, you know, they might be, I mean,
well, I suppose they don't have to be. I suppose you could also put the higher numbers on the back of the easier objectives, so therefore the harder hand you draw, the more resources you start with. You could do it that way too.
True, you could reverse it. That's a good idea. All right.
Any problem with that, though, is then wouldn't people know your objectives? Because they'd be able to see the back of your card.
As long as they're all 3, 4, or 5 points.
Okay, they can never know for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
All right,
pitch number two is that if we do this in some sort of Euro game where there's places to visit and things to collect resource-wise sort of thing, instead of moving a meeple, like a worker placement, and gaining the resources there, you have to play a card at location X. And depending on where you play the card's effect does something. So, for instance, if you played it at his apartment, you might get some sleep. If you played it at the fight club, you might gain some sanity. If you played it at wherever else, you get something else.
Yeah.
So each card.
So you could have like generic actions that only become specific when they're based on the location they're played in.
Yes.
So if you take
like a variety of cards that might like really maximize certain locations and minimize other locations. But if you're really desperate, you'd have to use it there.
Yeah, that could be cool because you could have, like, just recuperate. And if that ends up at the house, you might rest. If it's at the fight club, you might fight because that might recuperate your sanity.
Yes, yeah.
And if it ends up at Marla's house, it might be hanging out with her and maintaining the relationship, yep. And that might have some effect on your psyche. You could also have it if it ends up at the soap factory or does nothing.
Yep.
Or maybe in some cases there's like a penalty, so you've got a major project, and if you play that at the headquarters, it might allow you to progress Project Mayhem, and that may or may not be good for you depending on your objectives. Or if you play it at your house, it may end up blowing up your apartment.
Yeah, true.
Because, and therefore, you can't go there to rest anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. So the card you play will give you something, but you're choosing the location to play it, and it might put someone else's game plan out.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And I guess the idea that not every card has every location. Like, it might only have two or three locations because that's what it's specific to. Like you said, recuperate. There's only three places that you can recuperate. You can't recuperate at work.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. I mean, what would be cool is if, where your card triggered had something to do with where the character ended up, which you wouldn't necessarily know because you might not be in control of that.
Yeah.
So that might add that you sort of deduction where you kind of have to, maybe there's one player who's like the first player, and wherever they go is where actions happen. So you kind of have to deduce what they're trying to do and work out where they're going to go so that you can play actions in the right spot.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not just one place where actions trigger, like if they go to a certain place, as long as your action is in a close enough place that you could get to reasonably when it's, your character takes over Jack's psyche, then maybe it still has an effect. But maybe if it's too far away, as you were saying at the start, depending on where you go, might actually completely prevent some actions from taking place.
Yeah. I like the idea that there's only one meeple on the board that you're moving around.
Yeah.
Which is Jack.
And maybe that's where that moves is determined in secret while everyone else is playing.
Oh, yeah.
Actions. Yeah. I definitely like the idea of everyone maybe simultaneously playing an action card, but not 100% knowing what the effect will be based on what other players do. That would be super cool.
That's true. I mean, I like the idea of, there's a game I play, or is it a game I'm making? I can't remember. There's a game, I don't know which one it is, but I remember doing it where it's a Damsel's Tale. You've played the Damsel's Tale. So on which move goes first changes where the knight in the Damsel's Tale is, which will potentially affect the next card played. So in the Damsel's Tale, you play one card simultaneously with the other player in a two-player game. And so, for instance, the knight's card might go first and it will be a move card. So you were in hiding, but now you're in the open. And now the dragon's card says, if the knight's in hiding, or do this, but if the knight's in the open, do this. So it changes
what
the dragon was doing.
Another good comparison might be the Not Alone game, if people have played that.
Yes.
Where there's an alien hunting you, and if you effectively get caught by the alien, your action, you get a penalty, but otherwise you do the action. And that could work in this context because perhaps you're all Jack doing things that Jack wants to do.
Yes.
But if Tyler goes to your location, he takes over your psyche and does what he wants to do.
Yeah.
So maybe every time you play a card, there's like a Tyler action versus a Jack action. And sometimes the Tyler actions might really stuff up your plans and you want to make sure you avoid them.
Yeah, perfect. That actually sounds really good. And you could actually make a permanent Tyler player. But I was also thinking along the lines of, if someone has more rest, or less rest in their turn and they go first, it might affect the next player who wanted to do this, but now suddenly doesn't have enough rest, too much fatigue to be able to do something so heavy.
It'd be kind of cool if you all had your own sort of rest and sanity meters, and maybe the most insane player puts Tyler on the board each round.
Yes. Oh, that's
so amazing. That maybe that person playing Tyler actually switches from player to player over time.
Yeah.
That would be fairly unique. I don't know if I've ever seen a game do that. And that could potentially work. I mean, there's no reason why, as long as you've got an anchoring goal in terms of the cards you draw at the start, why being the antagonist and protagonist in different turns can't work. It can actually work still, I think.
Yeah.
And that'd be super fun because you could watch people's horror as you completely, you know, I mean, it'd be quite funny if, you know, what I was saying before, players go to rest at their home, but Tyler blows it up instead. You've lost that whole action, or, you know, you try and you're trying to avoid Marla at the support groups, but Tyler actually sleeps with her instead. Because that's sort of a conflict in the movie, where Tyler starts sleeping with Marla and Jack can't stand her. So that could actually be really thematic and be quite fun, I think, to play. I mean, obviously it's going to be more palatable to those type of players that sort of enjoy messing with each other's plans a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
It definitely sounds like a I mean, I guess it wouldn't directly be a take that game because you'd still be pursuing your own goals, but it definitely be one of those ones that it's a bit more in your face if you went down that route.
I think that's it. I think we've done it.
I think I like that idea. I reckon we can do it.
That's a great idea. It's not often. Do I see someone else has joined the call? I think Ben joined in.
No, it's too late. We already cracked the code, Ben.
Hey, Ben. How are you? He's not answering me.
Oh, well.
Okay.
I don't think we needed it anyway. I think we got there.
Yep. No, I think he came on to say hi. And, yep.
No, my microphone's not working.
Oh, there he is.
Ah, there we go.
Oh, yeah, I'm working. All right. Yay. Hi.
We just finished. So who are you and what do you do, Ben?
I'm the often absent co-host of this show, and you can find me on Twitter at Dr. Dallum.
Oh, thanks. And who are you and where can we find you, Jeff?
So one of the reasons why my game design aspirations have lacked is I actually run a Kickstarter-focused retailer in Australia. So you can find me on Facebook at The Game Saviour, or you can shop at www.thegamesaviour.com.
Perfect. All right. Thanks a lot for joining us. The game was great. Thanks for your input, Ben. And we'll talk to you later.
You're welcome.
All right. No worries, guys. Have a good night.
See ya.
Bye, y'all.
That's another game by the Dice Hard crew. You can see, read, and ask questions on the Facebook group Dice Hard Discussions. Alex can be found on Twitter at BlueRoomBG and at winter.persona.co. You can follow Dice Hard at Videoshop Pod on Twitter and see the complete Videoshop network at thevideoshop.com.au.